From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Last week, the nation watched and waited as leadership in Washington decided to indefinitely postpone its vote on a health care repeal and replacement package called the American Health Care Act. Few were watching closer than the Florida AARP, which came out fervently against the new plan, calling it an age tax. While that plan is gone for now, AARP leadership in Florida says health care reform is going to come back in one form or another, and the threat to people aged 50 to 64 is not gone, and Florida will see an outsized impact due to its larger number of retirees. We'll talk with AARP leaders about why that demographic in particular needs to stay alert. Plus, dystopian literature is growing in popularity. Sales of the book 1984 jumped by 10,000% in the days following the inauguration, and interest has spilled over into movie theaters. Next week, more than 100 theaters across the country will screen the film version of the George Orwell classic. We'll talk with scholars and the organizers of local screenings about this newfound interest in Big Brother and similar works. But first, the news. Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. Thought crime, doublespeak, and Big Brother are just some of the iconic words and memes given to us by George Orwell's classic novel, 1984. Orwell's dystopia is defined by a totalitarian government, a total lack of freedom, thought police, and the manipulation of media and history. The central character, Winston Smith, rebels against this oppressive government in the simplest of ways. He begins keeping a diary. That diary begins on April 4th. And on that day, 1 week from today, more than 100 movie theaters across the country are holding screenings of the film adaptation of 1984. Cinemas in Southwest Florida are taking part as well. The message of the film and the novel that inspired it are finding new interest from readers and viewers. Sales of 1984 and similar dystopian novels have soared in the past few months. 1984 alone has seen sales jump by 9,000%, and many see Orwell's thought police playing out in our language today with alternative facts and the language of being politically correct. Joining us here to talk about screenings of 1984 and related movies in the weeks to come is K.C. Schulberg from the Call Your Freedom Group. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Collier County ACLU President David Goldstein, who's providing a Q&A after the April 4 screening of 1984. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also, we have the chair of FGCU's Department of Language and Literature, Dr. Kimberly Jackson, here to share her perspective on 1984 and other works of literature and how they resonate with us today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We are talking about 1984, the George Orwell classic, whose movie adaptation is screening in South Florida and across the nation in a week from today. Do you see shades of Orwell playing out in our world today? Are there other dystopian novels or films that you find resonating today? You can call in and ask your questions and share your thoughts at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, K.C. Schulberg with the Call Your Freedom Group, you're organizing a screening of 1984 in Naples next Tuesday, April 4th. Tell us, why 1984 and why now?
While it's always interesting to get a perspective on a novel as kind of such a landmark novel as 1984, and it's important for citizens, informed citizens, to be vigilant against any encroachment of on their civil liberties. So I think it's useful to keep that in mind at any time, but even in this current time, as you said. When we're hearing quite commonly pronouncements about alternative facts or attempts to maybe channel reality or channel the truth, this is stuff that any thinking citizen should be vigilant about. So I think a movie like this stands the test of time, and it has resonance in any era. But I think it has particular resonance in this era.
Which version are you going to show? I think there are two movies.
We're going to show the one that was filmed in the 80s with John Hurt, not the black and white version, the color version.
That might the one translate better by Michael for people Radford. These days.
Sorry?
Yeah, that might translate better these days being in color.
Yeah.
So Dr. Kimberly Jackson with FGCU's Department of Language and Literature, we're talking about 1984, and it would be unfair to assume that everybody's read 1984. Mm-hmm. And I know I read it, but it was a long time ago. I need to reread it. But so for people who may have forgotten, it's in the recesses of back in high school. Can you tell me a little bit about the novel?
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've read it, actually. It is an example of a totalitarian society, one individual, that decide to break out of that, And as you say, write a diary and perform other things considered crimes in such a society, does end up being sort of brutally persecuted for what he's doing. And it's a very dark and kind of despairing, you know, sort of look at that kind of oppression and control.
Yeah. What kind of ideas or themes did Orwell give us in 1984, which was written in 48, that make a novel like that such a huge classic for Americans? Why do you think that people really hung on to this novel?
Well, I think that over the years since it was written, and certainly when it was written, the threat of totalitarian forms of government and the reality of those forms of government, you know, have certainly been something that that people have feared, you know, and those very overt, you know, sort of forms of oppression, you know, are obviously, you know, very, very resonant with a number of different people. I do think that today, you know, one of the questions that we have to ask ourselves is the extent to which, you know, the forms of oppression are very covert and insidious and not quite as overt and obvious as they are in that particular novel and the film.
It is interesting, the covert versus the obvious. And I want to get on to that in a minute. But David Goldstein with the Collier County ACLU, you're going to be at the screening of 1984 next week. So how are you involved in this? And what do you expect to do with the Q&A?
Well, obviously answer the questions.
You're not going to ask the questions?
No, hopefully we should have lots of questions about it. Our major concerns here are the civil liberties issues. I mean, I look at 1984 and the telescreen there and where Big Brother is watching you and listening to you. And I wonder today, is Big Brother government in terms of NSA / CIA or private industry in terms of Amazon, Google? Each of these wants to know a heck of a lot about us and more than we want to know. And how do we reconcile this with our constitutional rights to privacy?
And then again, is that covert version of knowing what's going on in everybody's – and there was just a bill up, I think, last week – taking away the ability to choose whether your information is given.
Yeah. I mean, we've lost our privacy. Well, let's be honest about it. There's very little of it. And all of this discussion about eavesdropping and whatever and wiretapping is quite real. And is Big Brother listening to us? Absolutely.
But then what's he doing with it?
Yeah.
Casey Schulberg with the Collier Freedom Group, you helped organize the Women's March on Washington back in January, and now you're screening 1984. Both of those events could be seen as partisan. So what do you say to people who think showing a film like 1984 is sour grapes after a Republican victory at the ballot box in November? Because that's probably going to happen. People are going to say these things.
Well, people are welcome to have that opinion. Actually, Collier Freedom is a nonpartisan group, and We made a point of being very inclusive, of allowing everyone to come and speak their mind about whatever their grievances might be. We also made a point of kind of telling people that this is not an anti-administration event. Neither is 1984. The screening that we're helping to organize, and actually we're dovetailing into a national program because it's being screened all over the country. It's just an opportunity to examine the state of affairs in our present society, and to see whether there are, you know, whether there are any reasons for concern. Mm-hmm. And I think every citizen has not only a right but an obligation to remain vigilant and to make sure that their personal rights are being defended. So it's not a partisan event. Everyone is welcome to come, and we're not going to be espousing any anti-Trump doctrine.
We're not going to be bashing anybody.
That's what we're saying. It's going to be a nice opportunity for people to get together and just air some of these views.
So I spoke with Dr. Myra Mendible with FGCU's Comparative Literary and Cultural Studies, and she says that Orwell's novel and the film adaptation kind of resonates with both liberals and conservatives. Let's hear what she had to say.
It depends how you want to look at it, from what ideological lens. It has, I think, resonated among people in the right based on notions of political correctness and not being able to say what you think, et cetera. But more recently, I would speak specifically to the post-Trump election, why sales have gone up 9,000% on the for the book has to do more with the sense that language itself is being hijacked, that we live in a world of alternative facts. We live in a world of so-called fake news where really it's a matter of what you choose to believe rather than what is actually factual or based on evidence. Belief takes over everything rather than having to, you know, prove a claim that you make. And so that hijacking of language, I mean, consider, for example, that the 2016 word of the year for the Oxford Dictionary was post-truth. It was a word that people were looking up. It was a word that people were using. And that, I think, is quite new in some ways, but yet quite relevant to the world in which Winston lives.
And the idea of fake news is very Orwellian and some of the words that she was using there. And it's used by both liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats on both sides, where you hear fake news, but then you hear political correctness. I can't speak my mind because I have to be politically correct. And so voters say that they can't trust the media itself. They're turning to alternative news sources. Others simply dismiss statistics, questioning where the numbers come from. And at this point in our history, nothing is trusted at face value as a fact, and it's usually couched in belief. Dr. Jansen, is that a big part of the 1984 novel?
Yeah, I think that it is. But to speak more specifically to our time, you know, I think that that misuse of the media and the spread of misinformation and alternative facts and things like that, you know, is much more pointed today, where politics is taking place largely in virtual reality, right? Whether it's the internet or social media or whatever. And the spread of information and misinformation is so rapid, and that virtual reality has very little contact with actual reality, but it has devastating impacts on actual reality. And there's no one to check the facts because there's no real facts to be had, as both sides seem to understand.
Yeah. We are talking about 1984, the George Orwell classic whose movie adaptation is screening in South Florida and across the nation a week from today. You can give us a call and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. David Goldstein with the Collier County ACLU, I wanted to ask you, what do you tell people who are navigating the landscape of belief versus fact?
I think late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan put it best. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. They're not entitled to their own facts. I mean, we have to get to a society where alternative facts are called what they are, which is lies. And I don't think we're quite there yet. A very small portion of the media is willing to do that. And we're getting more and more fact-checking in the media. And I think that's a major piece of this issue.
And another part of it is the media has become splintered to a point where there isn't a whole lot of oversight. There are some places in the internet where there isn't an editor fact-checking.
Well, that's true even on the daily newspapers. The editing is gone pretty much. I mean, it's a matter of get the stuff out as fast as possible as opposed to as accurate as possible.
Yeah,
and that is a major contributing fact to this issue.
Yeah, they call it feeding the beast. And while we were talking about the impact of the internet and things happening so fast and spreading so quickly and going so far, again, I want to go back to Dr. Myra Mendible with FGCU's Comparative Literary and Cultural Studies. She says that Orwell's novel resonated with her in a unique way because she was born in Cuba and experienced life under the Castro regime with no internet.
Having been born in Cuba myself and knowing a little bit about what that was like when Fidel Castro took over and this whole idea that you had a neighborhood watch, you don't even need the internet in that sense. If you create enough division and suspicion and paranoia and fear based on ideology and belief systems, then it doesn't matter. You can watch your neighbor. And if you think your neighbor is acting in a suspicious manner, you can create all kinds of stories about him or work as a kind of enforcer to ensure that everybody goes along with the party line. And that can operate within one's own ideological sphere so that somebody who is on the left or on the right, who doesn't conform entirely to the beliefs of their party, would also be then targeted as not being sufficiently loyal to the line.
So this brings me with two important takeaways. I think it's easy to blame the internet because of its expediency in disseminating information, be it true or false, but you don't need that. You just need division and fear, really, to get to a Big Brother type of a state. But number two is, coming from Cuba, the far-fetched world of 1984 seems more like a realistic possibility for Dr. Mendible than it did for me as a Midwestern kid when I read it in Kansas City. And I never, that'll never happen here. I wanted to ask you, David Goldstein with Collier County ACLU, when did you read 1984? And when you did you even think it was a possibility in America?
I read it in the 50s, and I did not see it as a possibility then. Unfortunately, as I reread it now and look at what's happening in our world today, I'm much more concerned about it being a possibility. I still think our system of checks and balances is strong enough that it will not happen here, but I wish I felt 100% sure that it won't happen here.
Yeah. And Casey Shulberg with the Collier Freedom Group, we're not a DEFCON Big Brother yet. But do you think that there are some red flags in society now that compare to 1984?
Well, I think there's a couple of trends that are very dangerous. I think the siloing of thought so that everyone stays within their own realm and gets their news feed from their own tradition, their own uniquely from their own source, I think that's very dangerous. So there's a sharing of information, and people become so addicted and such avid followers of that silo of news. That's a little scary.
Yeah, operating in their own little bubble as well.
Yeah. And they just disbelieve anything that is outside that realm of truth. I mean, the supporters of the president will not, even if he lies, a lot of them will say, I believe him, even if other people are telling me that he's telling me mistruths, I will believe him. So, and that's true not just of the right, but it's true of the left. The people that are so adamant about their own beliefs that they refuse to even contemplate another idea. So that's a little dangerous. And then this idea that we're untethered from the truth is a really scary notion, because it's sort of the foundation. I mean, that's sort of – if the left and the right, or whatever the political parties might be, if they have a common understanding of what the truth is, well, there's a basis of discussion. But if the if we become sort of untethered from the truth, then we start to drift off into some very, very dangerous zones. And I think for both of those reasons, in this day and age, 1984 has relevance.
And I wanted to ask you a similar question, Dr. Jansen. This being untethered from the truth and operating in a bubble where you're unwilling to even look at stories that disagree with your point of view and be able to look at facts and say, I still don't believe that. I've interviewed scientists talking about global warming, and they're saying these are the facts we're working with. And then there are people that don't believe in global warming, and they say, I don't believe it. But they, you know, have a bachelor's degree in mathematics or whatever. I mean, they're mm-hmm. So how does 1984 kind of speak to that, and how does it resonate in today's day and age as far as being able to be divorced from facts and siloing information?
Well, like I said before, you know, I think to some extent or another, there are very few facts to be had. And when you're, you know, confronted with, like you're talking about, alternative facts, you know, where basically you can dig up statistics to support any argument that you want to.
Yeah, statistics can really be bent.
Yes, exactly. Taken out of context, manipulated, and, you know, seem like, you know, you actually have facts, you know, supporting your particular side, when actually, you know, those facts, you know, have been, you know, manipulated, bent, you know, altered and taken out of context. So again, I think that the way the information is disseminated, I think that the access, you know, to information, strangely enough, you know, is what puts people in these silos, right? Because I can find whatever I want, you know, to support whatever side of an argument I want to support. And it doesn't have to be, you know, something that's real, true, actual fact.
Are there some other novels like this that come to mind that kind of speak to some of the themes that we're seeing today?
Oh, gosh, I'm sure there are.
For example, The Handmaid's Tale, that's getting a bit of a revival, and it's going to be having a TV show coming out soon. In Orwell's 1984, women were equal opportunity being controlled, but it's a different situation in The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, it is. And that's a good sort of example of, you know, an earlier text that's examining an earlier period, you know, in feminism where, you know, we still were talking about more overt forms of oppression. And certainly the, you know, really none of the individuals in The Handmaid's Tale are actually on board with what's going on. Right. You know, I mean, so it's not like there are supporters and non-supporters. It's sort of this weird matter of survival. And everybody, to some extent or another, is oppressed, even at the highest levels. But I think what we're seeing today in an era, you know, that many feminist critics are calling post-feminist is that the sort of forms of oppression of women have taken kind of an underground, you know, sort of existence. And what passes for liberalism and tolerance is not necessarily that. And that's largely to do with media representations, you know, that that may on the surface, you know, be sort of supporting girl power and all this sort of thing, but are still employing many of the same oppressive tactics that, you know, that have been problems in the past.
And in the world of film, there's another one that you're going to be screening in the future called A Face in the Crowd.
Yeah, Face in the Crowd is a very different movie. It's not really a dystopian environment.
It's kind of a cult of personality one.
It's a cult of personality. It was quite prescient. It was made in 1957. Actually, my uncle, Bud Schulberg, was the screenwriter. And it was directed by Elia Kazan. Bud and Kazan had worked the year before on the film On the Waterfront. So they had quite a bit of mojo. But this time they chose to explore how entertainment and politics were going to be intertwined in the future and how an entertainer could merge over into the world of politics.
Well, that was pretty predictive because that's happened a lot since.
Well, it has. It has. It's why a lot of people think that this was a movie way ahead of its time. The guy has sort of a larger-than-life personality, an every man way of speaking that connects with the audience. And the guy becomes an extremely powerful guy that merges over into politics and becomes a political kingmaker, not a candidate himself. But it's sort of suggested that might be the next step.
And it's Andy Griffith, right?
And in his first film role.
Yeah,
that was his breakout role, and Lee Remick's first role. It was the movie that discovered Lee Remick.
So when are you going to be showing that one?
The 25th of April.
25th of April.
At Sugden. We're actually changing the Sugden Playhouse and Naples Players Playhouse into a cinema for that night. We're going to do two screenings at 4 and 7 p.m.
And then also next week, April 4th, is when you're going to be showing 1984?
Yeah, at the Silver Spot Cinema. So those tickets are available through – sorry to pitch this, but part of what we're talking about. The Silver Spot – you can get those tickets at the Silver Spot for 1984 and directly through the Sugden Players for April 25th for The Face in the Crowd.
And we have links on WGCUnews.org to all that for everybody that's interested in it. So I want to thank you guys for coming in and talking with me. It's been really fun, and I could probably talk for another hour. So we'll probably be hanging out here in the studio if you don't mind.
Yep.
I want to thank you. Casey Schulberg, Collier Freedom, David Goldstein with Collier County ACLU President, and Dr. Kimberly Jackson, FGCU Chair of Language and Literature. And I also want to thank Dr. Myra Mendable with FGCU's Comparative Literacy and Cultural Studies for her comments. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.
To the past or to the future, to an age when thought is free, from the age of Big Brother, from the age of the thought police.